the Bofala podcast. Hi everyone, it's Monique Gordion, and the great news is you found the podcast, a space for stories that will arouse a smile and inspire us as we tap into our collective experiences. Enjoy. Welcome everybody to the Bofala podcast. So great
hang
to
on,
have...
Hang on a sec.
Yeah?
I hate to interrupt, but my name is Annie Luby, and we're turning the tables today.
Oh dear.
We're going to be hearing from the wonderful Monique about her story. So Monique and I met at the Hoffman Process, which is a wonderful deep dive, week-long residential deep dive into family of origin and how we become the people we become. And I know that you have an amazing story and history, and I want to hear from you.
Well, I've got to say, I'm feeling a little nervous with the shoe on the other foot, but no, I'm going to share a story about story, really, in that we have stories that we carry with us throughout our life. And some of it is based on fact, real occurrences, others memories, which psychologists say only 50% of our memories are accurate. Mm-hmm. You're a psychologist, aren't you? So I don't know if that, but that's what I've read. And then there's the truth and what really has happened. So I want to tell a story that really highlights that, the stories we tell about our lives and how it affects us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to dig right back to as a child. I was born 6 weeks premature, and in those days you stayed in the hospital the whole time. So my mum would visit me every day, and I was in like one of those boxes.
Humidity crib.
Yeah, because I was very small. But I don't think I was in a risk of dying or anything. But I went home with my mum. But it was, so she had a guy, they weren't married, so I had a dad, but he came and went. It was a little bit of an unstable sort of relationship. Apparently, he became her agent. She was a singer. So it was all very kind of lovely.
Showbiz.
Yeah, very showbiz. And but he would come and go, and she told me stories about who he was as a person. And anyway, when I was about 2.5, he stole me off my mum. So
he kidnapped you.
Abducted me is what they say today. So for 15 months I was on the road with my dad. So my dad was at that stage around 26, so young. He was young. I don't know what he did during that time. Mum told me he was a ladies man, so maybe his girlfriends looked after me. I was 2.5. I have no memory, but I was with him for 15 months, and mum was actually in our home for unwed mothers having a child to him. And sadly, the nuns took him, Ricky, off her. So that was pretty traumatic for her because she was deemed unfit to have a child. So she hopped on the road in search of me. And eventually, you know, going all throughout Queensland, because he was a bit of a nomad, she found me and then stole me back.
Wow. Right?
So that whole period of my life, which is really integral to how children see themselves in the first 4 years of life. So my first four years of life was quite eventful. And then my mother actually put me in a home with a family, so I didn't actually live with her. So that was another upheaval, right? So, and I loved this family. They were called the Dodds. We lived in Maryborough. And I thought I was there for like somewhere between a year and a half.
Right.
Don't know the exact dates. My mother wasn't really very forthcoming with information. I think shame possibly could have been a big factor for her, but, you know, she did love me. Anyway, I was with them for that period of time, and I thought they were my parents.
Right.
I thought their children, the boy and girl, were my siblings. And mum would take me on weekends for the weekend, and I would say bye-bye to mum, which was Mrs. Dodd. And then my mum would get kind of annoyed because she'd be saying all weekend, I'm your mum. So then I'd say, bye-bye, mum. And then I'd go back to my other mum. And it was I was very happy. I loved that place. It was a really normal family. Mm. We went fishing for yabbies. You know, I learned how to ride a bike. You know, it was
so five years old?
Yeah, that? So from like four and a half to five.
Mm.
I think we left at five. Anyway, Mum packed me away from her because she did say she didn't like this whole business of me calling Mrs. Dodd my mum, and I can understand that. So we went to Melbourne. And basically, it was very nomadic. I had 10 schools in 5 years. Sometimes I lived with her. She was a live-in housekeeper. But, like, when we first went down there, we were in, like, some sort of ground floor bungalow or flat. And she would... I'd go to before school care, and then she wouldn't get home until 8 o'clock at night. So I would... It was Melbourne in the winter.
Mm.
So I'd play outside in... And then once it got dark, I'd come inside and I'd be sitting in the dark. I was petrified.
On your own?
On my own. I don't know what I did for food. I guess I ate when she got home. But I remember being petrified.
Mm.
Because we had had someone break in and Mum was telling me to be very careful. Mm. We had a secret knock. It was really scary and I felt very alone.
A lot of neglect.
Yeah. Anyway, and then I, you know, lived... around and about different places with her, and then at 9 or 10 I lived with another family. That didn't kind of work out so well, but they had a bungalow in the back and Mum and I moved in there, so that was great. I was with my mum again, but unfortunately she had a job that she didn't get home till 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
So I was alone. She was asleep when I got up, and then she didn't get home till 11, so I would go to take myself to school, come home. Television was my friend. When the television broke down, I had a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
I would cook one chop because I didn't know how to cook anything else.
And at nine years old?
At 10. And I was petrified because the toilet was outside.
Mm.
So I had to go out into the dark. So sometimes I wouldn't go to the toilet for hours, you know. And it was really, and I think something kind of entered into me at that time. Like it was the beginning of this dark, like... my insides were hollowed out, like there was a wind gusting through me, and I felt totally empty. And I think, you know, we'd call that abandonment. Anyway, things started looking up because she got this boyfriend, and we went and they got married, but unfortunately he was abusive, violent and emotionally abusive, and she attempted suicide, and I wasn't allowed to talk to her or be alone with her. It was a really bad, bad place. I thought this was going to be fantastic, a nice house. I had a stepsister. I thought it was going to be, because before they got married, it was great. You know, we used to go out in boats because he sold boats. But anyway, I'm kind of digressing here. But it wasn't great. And so I lived there till I was 19. And then I travelled.
New chapter.
Yeah, and I lived overseas for about 2.5 years, and in those days there were no smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So I was free. I was happy. I lived with all these great people. That's the other thing. When I was 15, I became a born-again Christian. I went to a camp.
Right.
And I believe that experience turned my life around because I don't go to church now. I have very much a spiritual life, and it's very important to me. But at that time, I was told that God loved me, and I felt safe.
Mm.
I felt loved. I felt cared for.
Mm.
So it became very important to me, and it was my escape from that really terrible home. I went to youth group. I made friends.
Mm.
I ended up leaving home and living with a married couple from that church, and it was a hub. We took kids in off the street. You know, it was a really great place. And so I was happy. Mm. You know, I was still a bit bruised. Mm. And I'm friends with him to this day, actually, the couple. Anyway, went overseas, had a great time, came home, and got involved in a Christian cult, and that wasn't so great. That wasn't great. But what was great about that place was I got into drama. So I started writing skits. I was performing. I performed in Europe, was on TV, performed in front of 10,000 people, did a tour, and I came back, got married. That was great. I thought, this is my safe place, new safe place. Had a child. Things were, you know, great.
Mm.
And I started my own creative entertainment company, and I was performing, and, you know, it was really great. And I've got to say that spirituality, which I did kind of put on the back burner at that time, creativity and having a son, these were things that actually brought me so much joy.
Mm.
And even though my marriage wasn't fantastic, what I did to cope all those years was to, I told myself a story that I was tenacious and brave.
Mm.
So all the hurt that I had, and also because I was involved in the church, I was told, I felt I needed to be a good girl.
Mm-hmm.
And also at home, I had to kind of shut up and be a good girl, because otherwise there'd be chaos.
Mm.
So I learned to stop, to ignore my sadness, to ignore my pain, and be a good girl, be a people pleaser, and to not talk. Now, I'm a talker, so that was pretty tough.
I can't imagine that.
So I was really kind of fighting against who, all my pain and who I was as a person, because I didn't. So that's why becoming creative and performing and having a child, and I really, I love my son. We have a great relationship. But nurturing him, and I actually learned so much about life through having a child. It was great. So, and I still do, but particularly how to see the world and how to be loving and kind, you know, and to love something else. Mm. It was very good and very healing for me. I loved it. Anyway, cut a long story short. I had a great time, but then things started falling apart. Two people died, and my stepfather and my sister died. Mum had emphysema. She was very sick. I got divorced because the last 10 years the marriage wasn't great.
Mm.
But that's something I found out about myself, is I stay in things because it's convenient, and I subjugate my desires and needs.
Mm.
And that's something I still have a habit of doing. So I'm learning about that. Mm. You can just jump in anytime you want.
I'm loving it.
Okay.
I'm riveted.
Oh, okay. Great. I don't want to be boring. Yeah, no, I didn't recognize the patterns until now, actually, because I repeated it with a guy I've been with for the last 6 years, you know.
Right.
It was convenient. I didn't really love him, but it was convenient, and it was nice to have someone love me, you know.
Yeah.
So I've learned from that. I learned a pattern in my life. Anyway, and then I got cancer. So I was alone. My son had left home and I had cancer. It was stage 2. It wasn't really life-threatening, but it was just like another blow. And I had collapsed. I was burnt out. I loved my business, but things had changed because of the GFC. And I wasn't performing so much because the company got so big and busy that I was doing sales and logistics, pitching and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I had assistants and things, but I was empty, really. I just was exhausted. Mm. And so I decided to go on sabbatical. And I just put an out of office message in on my computer. And I disappeared for like 2 years.
Right.
I sold my townhouse. That wasn't a good financial decision, but you know, you live and you learn. And some really great things happened in those 2 years. Mm. I walked the Camino. I really got in touch with that I'm braver, or not braver, but I'm not a sick person because I have the cancer.
Yes.
And I got some joy and met some great people, and who I'm still friends with to this day. But when I came back, I thought I went with no intentions, but I actually did. I really wanted to find my tribe.
Mm.
I wanted someone to say, hey, you're fantastic. Come and join us.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. Right. So I came back, didn't want to do my business, and I couldn't get a job. I couldn't even get a job making sandwiches at Subway. Like, no one wanted me. I was overqualified, but I also was exhausted.
Mm.
And so my value was really being challenged. I felt like nothing.
Mm.
It was really terrible, actually. Mm. And the dark, that dark grey fog, which I guess is depression, came in, and I was really not in a great place. Mm. I wasn't suicidal, but I did... I used to walk around my apartment. Oh, by the way, my son was living in overseas. He was travelling the world and stuff. Mm. So I didn't... He was my only relative because my mum had died as well during that period.
Mm.
So I was quite alone.
Mm, sounds like a very lonely
place. Yeah, and I'd moved to a new area. I moved to the Gold Coast, so I didn't really have any friends.
Mm.
It was really difficult. And I'd walk around the apartment at night, tidying up, making sure there were no dirty dishes in the sink, making sure my nightie was nice. I had clean underwear on. Everything was neat and tidy, just in case I died in the night.
Mm.
I wasn't sick. Well, I was sick, but I didn't know.
Mm.
But I just was empty, you know. It was a bit of a crisis, actually. Yeah. And I went to the
dark night of the soul.
It was really, yeah. Mm. And I went to the doctor and I said, look, I'm having problems breathing. And he goes, it's just stress. And I was stressed because I had no money. Mm. I'd spent it all travelling the world, having a great time. I did lots of courses, so it wasn't just, you know, I learned some really great things. But anyway, I ended up getting a scan, and cut a long story short, I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic cancer. So the cancer in my breast had spread to the lymph nodes around my lungs, not in my lungs, and it was terminal.
Right.
So I was told, you know, that's it.
Wow.
And it really was a shock, and I was alone. I rang a few people, and they were beautifully sympathetic and supportive, which I didn't do last time I had cancer. I didn't tell anyone because I didn't want it to affect my business. But this time I had nothing to lose. So I had some people I told, obviously my son, who's wonderful. And I knew, I remember sitting in my lounge room going, I have a choice here to live or to die.
Mm.
Remembering I'd just been walking around my apartment every night thinking I was could die.
Yeah.
And I went, you know what? Damn it, I want to live. Mm. I really want to live.
Mm.
So I had no money, remember? Mm. So I couldn't do any treatments.
Mm.
But what I could do was I could meditate. So I used to go to my bathroom in the dark and listen to self-hypnosis recordings.
Mm.
And what I did was I loved myself.
Mm.
I didn't fight cancer.
Yeah.
I loved cancer.
Mm.
Like, I know that cells do things, but they don't have ill intent.
Mm.
Cancer cells don't realize they're bad. They just want to grow and grow and grow. Mm. I had lived a great life, traveling the world, performing, running a company. I'd also had drama.
Mm.
But what I had was, I was an adrenaline person. I would wake up in the morning and I was like,
go, go, go.
Go.
Mm.
When something drastic happened, it was a drama. I would tell people about it.
Mm.
I really knew that what I needed to do was just to go within. So every day I would lie in the bathroom. I mean, I started doing things like coffee enemas, sorry, folks, and various things like that that I could afford. But I would visualize myself. So I'd been studying in the course of getting cancer things like epigenetics, quantum physics, the placebo effect, all of that. I wanted to calm down my nervous system. I wanted to go from a heightened nervous system to a calm nervous system. So you know, I'd lie down there every day and I would basically just talk to my body, telling it how much I loved my body, and talk to my cells and tell my cells I loved them. I would, by this stage I had gotten touch back with God again. I use the word God generally, so it was a non-denominational sort of God, but but a close relationship. Sorry, folks, about the dog, but you just have the to dog, put up with that.
You know, the dog's gone backwards.
Yes, I have a beautiful little dog. For those who don't, I might put a picture in this podcast. Anyway, I did something in quantum physics called entanglement. Have mm-hmm. you heard of that?
Yep.
So one of the first things I did was I learnt about Schrodinger's cat. I heard about Schrodinger's cat. Schrodinger's cat is a way of explaining quantum physics. There's a cat in a box. Next to it is a bowl of poison. The person outside the box makes a decision whether the cat's dead or alive. And when they open the box, the cat is what they thought it was, which is called the observer effect. So right from the beginning of getting that diagnosis, I kept saying to myself, my cat's alive, my cat's alive, my cat's alive, my cat's alive. And I would tell myself, I'm healed. I'm healed. I had a vision.
Mm.
I had heard a voice in the night. So I had some really nice things to hold on to.
Mm.
I had faith, even though everything was unknown.
Mm.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, I've now been well over 18 months cancer-free. Mm. I just love my body. It was a really, when I say body, I mean my emotions, my intellect, my body, my spirit.
All of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
I learned some things on the Hoffman process, obviously, which we'll get into. But it was a beautiful time. I ended up getting some money from Super. So I was able to start getting on some good medications, holistic sort of practices, hyperbaric chamber, heat treatment, and so on and so forth. And anyway, it was the best time of my life, the worst time and the best time.
Mm. Mm.
I realized that not everything outside of me can go up and down, but as long as I'm grounded and within myself okay, then I can get through it. But I wasn't going into those dark places that I had previously, but I knew that that was there, and I didn't know how to stop that coming, because it would just come on me out of nowhere, and for 3 days I'd just be kind of curled up in a ball crying. I just was overwhelmed with hopelessness and despair.
But it also sounds like in amongst that, that you made a very clear choice and that you kept coming back to that choice of to live or to die.
Yes.
To orient yourself towards, you know, what you know to be your light or your spirit or your whole being.
And it's love. It's a really interesting thing when you got a situation like this. It's a paradox, actually, because on the one hand you believe in your health, you believe in healing, but on the other hand you've got to be prepared to die. Right, you've got to face death,
yes,
and not pretend everything's rosy.
No, because that would be a pattern again, wouldn't it? Of overlaying or magical thinking.
So I was in this kind of space where I had to hold these two things and be balanced without freaking out, without swinging one way ridiculously and swinging the other way. So that was a really great experience to sort of be in the unknown, accept the worst could happen, but also truly believe that I was going to live till I'm 80 something. It's faith, really, is believing in the unknown.
Yes, absolutely.
And believing in my body. So I believe that my body, because the body heals ourselves every single day.
Yeah.
Everyone has cancer cells, you know. Anyway, so then I heard about this this course or this thing called the Hoffman process. It sounded pretty good. I got interviewed, passed. I was a candidate. And I went along, and it's kind of like group therapy. Do you want to just kind of give a brief intro?
It's a large group process, so it's run in a large group, but also partly in a small group and partly one-on-one. So it's a beautiful, really deep dive. It's a process that's been around for more than 50 years worldwide, and it's very effective at processing, you know, historical material. you know, that's been sitting underneath all the layers yes. of defense for yes. a very long time. So it's a really beautiful process, as you now know.
It's beautiful and difficult.
It's very challenging. It's not for the faint-hearted.
I thought, oh, this is going to be like every other retreat that I've been on. Because I went and saw lots of counsellors, and they always kept saying to me, you're amazing. You know, and occasionally one would say, you need to get out of your head and into your feelings. Mm. And I said, I can't do that. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I am telling you about my feelings.
Mm.
I couldn't go to my feelings. Mm. I could not go there. The Hoffman process... facilitated me to go to my feelings. It was my choice. I didn't have to. But I remember at one point we were doing something in the process and we were asked to do an exercise. And I looked at Amanda, who was my facilitator. I said, look, I can't. I literally cannot do this. And she goes, well, do you want to be free? And I said, I do, but I can't do it.
Mm.
And then I remember, just like the life and death thing with the cancer, I went, okay, I'm going to do it. And basically what it was facing my hurt and my anger.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'd been telling myself all my life that I'm a good girl, mm. that I'm a fixer, I'm a peacekeeper, because that was my role. I'm a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm resilient mm-hmm. and I'm brave.
Mm.
That didn't coincide with... I'm hurt, I'm wounded, I've had shitty things happen to me. I mean, I could tell everyone about my shitty childhood, but I didn't do it from a feeling place. I did it from, this was my experience.
Mm.
This was facing it.
Mm.
And it was really difficult.
Mm, it's very courageous.
Yeah, but that's I did it.
That's real bravery.
It was, you're that not... was real bravery. Mm-hmm. Suppressing not so. Is not so brave.
Yeah.
I thought it was, but... Anyway, so the Hoffman process was amazing, and we did a whole lot of really life-enhancing things. And one of the things we had to do was bring a photo of our parents. And I bought a photo of my dad, because my story about my dad was that, from my mum, was that he was a ladies' man, he was a gambler, he was all of these things, and all negative.
Mm.
And I figured he didn't love me because I didn't understand why he stole me, because
mm-hmm.
she couldn't ever tell me why he did that.
Mm.
But I never heard from him again. So my understanding was he didn't love me. It just tied into that abandonment thing that I've carried all my life. Anyway, I had this photo of him holding me as a baby. I'd seen this photo before, but I'd never seen the photo.
Mm.
For the first time, I saw that he was looking at me with love.
Mm.
And it was like a bolt of lightning. It was incredible.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, I think my dad loved me.
Mm.
And there was that wasn't based on fact, because the facts I heard were contrary to that.
Mm.
And then we did an exercise closing ceremony where I may not explain this very well, but basically we bring our parents together and they dance or something.
Yeah,
right?
It's beautiful, yeah.
So I had a feeling my dad was dead and my mum was dead.
Mm.
And I saw them come together and dance.
Mm.
And honestly, it was just so moving.
Mm.
To bring these two together who had obviously had a terrible breakup. I don't know what exactly went wrong.
Mm. But that they'd loved each other once.
Yeah, and I saw them dancing and looking at each other with love.
Mm.
And I just felt so... I felt like something had mended metaphysically. You know, I felt like something had been resolved.
Mm.
Resolved in my heart and resolved in theirs, that I'd brought them together.
Mm.
And it was just fantastic. And something changed in my heart. Mm. And I realized that I felt that my dad loved me.
Mm.
And so all of that burden of that, what I thought he was, sort of was lifted. I could let it go. And whatever it was, it didn't really matter anymore. I just felt great.
Mm.
Anyway, I left the Hoffman process. It really was... anyone out there who feels they need some deep work, I highly guarantee it. It's challenging, but there's a lot of joy and fun as well. Yeah. Oh my God, we had some fun times.
It's not all pain and anger.
No, it isn't all pain and anger. I mean, we did lots of dancing and
amazing,
lots of fun, which I like fun. So it was great for me. Anyway, not long after the Hoffman, I decided I'd go on to Ancestry.com.
Yeah.
Because I have like a dark complexion.
Mm.
And my mum had told me that my dad was half Spanish.
Mm.
And this was kind of like egoic thing. People would say, oh, where are you from? I'd say, oh, well, I'm part Spanish, you know, and part French. And they go, oh, wow, how exotic, you know. And it was kind of a bit of an egoic thing for me. And so I did the Ancestry.com to prove how Spanish I was. And it came back as 2%. And I thought, holy cow.
Ripped off.
What does that mean? Like, was my dad not my dad? Mm. Right? Because he was half Spanish.
Mm.
And who was I? What was going on here? Anyway, I parked it because it was a bit like, that was a little bit difficult to sort of think about.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just parked it because I was too focused on love and joy in my life to worry too much about that. But I had also opened it up to relatives could contact me, you know, people who genetically are matched. I got a message from someone who said to me, I think we may be related because we had quite a high match.
Yeah.
I rang her up.
Yeah.
And I said to her, oh, yeah, look, this is my dad's name. If you know that person, let me know. Like, I was a bit dubious, to be honest.
Mm.
Anyway, cut long story short, she contacted me. And she was my half-sister.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have 7 half-siblings and 18 uncles and aunts.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'd
always... all on your dad's side.
Yeah, on my dad's side. I don't know my mum's side because that's a different kind of test that you do, DNA test. But all of a sudden, I was like, oh, because I'd always been on my own. Yeah. Like, even when my mum married, I wasn't allowed to even talk to her. And she went a little crazy. She was in a bad place. So she was difficult as well as her husband. And poor soul, she had had a terrible life. So she was difficult all her life, actually. So it was a very difficult relationship. But now I'm getting lost in all that.
The siblings.
Oh, yeah. So,
lots of siblings.
Yeah, so I had all these siblings.
In Australia?
Yeah, in Australia.
Mm.
And then I talked to her and she told me, listen to this,
what?
She told me that the reason she went on Ancestry.com was to find me because my dad talked about me all the time.
Oh, wow. I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, he tried to find me for years. Oh. He even hired a private detective. Now, he was a working class man, right? He was in construction. He wasn't a gambler. He wasn't, I mean, I think he actually was a bit of a ladies man, that's true.
Well, there are 7 half siblings. So.
No, they're all from one family.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, anyway, that doesn't matter, you know. Anyway, we won't go there.
Whether he was a ladies man or not.
It doesn't matter. But
he was looking for
me. He was looking for me. He'd hired a private detective. But see, when she ran away from him.
Yeah.
We had like 4 or 5 different names.
Right.
Like I was known by a whole different lot of names. And we moved, as you know, we moved around a lot, 10 schools in 5 years. Maybe he didn't, his detective wasn't great, I don't know, but he never found me. But he said to her, my Tara, my half-sister, that he wanted to find me so he could bring me into his family.
Oh, wow. Wow. And this has happened after you had that beautiful forgiving and
vision.
Letting go. And
so it's, you know, so he loved me.
Mm.
He really did love me.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he stole me, because my mum was in an interesting space.
Mm.
And, you know, I guess, you know, he went on and got married and had 7 kids and, you know, he tried to find me, bless him.
Mm.
And anyway, he died in 1989, so I've never had a chance to meet him.
Mm.
But I have met some half-siblings. And it really, it's not so much this finding the family isn't so much really about me connecting with them. It's really knowing that my dad loved me.
Yeah.
And that, I'd already had my heart cracked open
mm.
and it just was now blooming with beautiful fragrance and
yeah.
love. And
yeah.
So all of this journey just kept reinforcing that I, as we talk about in the Hoffman, that I'm loved, loving and lovable.
Mm.
And I knew then that that is who I was. Mm. There was no shadow of a doubt.
Mm.
I did have a traumatic upbringing. I mean, I have not even touched on when I was in that Christian cult. I mean, it was terrible.
It's another podcast.
And but you know, it's all so many things, beautiful things came out of that. You know, I learned my creativity and so on. But I guess what's interesting is I had carried a lot of hurt all my life, and I had two stories: abandonment and that I was resilient and brave, but that was to suppress this abandonment.
Mm.
So, I mean, it wasn't the only reason I got cancer. I have an issue with that my body doesn't let go of estrogen, so that's my cancer was estrogen positive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had to stop, and I was on the pill for 20 years, and so my body was full of estrogen, so it just got cancer from that. And but I do think the dark despair, the abandonment, the never feeling safe. The
cushing of way of feeling.
And I always felt other and separate. Even when I had friends, I would think, do they really like me? I always felt outside, like I was outside looking in. And that's common. You know, a lot of people feel these things. I always thought it was just me because everyone else looked happy to me. And I was sad.
Yeah. But you had a happy mask though.
I had a very happy mask.
Yeah.
Because I think my personality is pretty joyful and I am a cup half full kind of girl. And I have a lot to be grateful for even within all of that. But what a wonderful bow on that story of finding out what the true story was.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's
the story within the story. And how, as you said, like at the beginning, how we base so much on what we think is our truth or the facts. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's
it.
Yeah. And then to have that extraordinary inner experience, that spiritual experience of your own deep knowing. And then to have that reflected back and affirmed in the most beautiful way. It's very inspiring. And it's just beautiful.
And, you know, we can't control a lot of stuff.
Mm.
But what we can control is our self-love.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I can self-regulate now with all the tools I learned on the Hoffman process. One of the things I'll just share that I really loved, I think it's the main thing I took away, was I can have a conversation between my intellect, my mind, my emotions, my body, and my spirit. So if because I'm a bit of a head person, so I can overwork, over-intellectualize, get into stuff. And on the other hand, my emotions, you know, have a habit in the past of, I used to say I'm an actor and I'm a Gemini. So, you know, if I'm hot and cold, that's not my fault. Right. But, you know, so there definitely was an emotional component and there still is. You know, we all are emotional, but I'm able to have a conversation within all the different parts of me, whichever part is overworking or overreacting or whatever. It may take me a day or two before I realize what state I'm in or an hour or 10 minutes. And then I go, oh, hello. I see what's happening here. So let's just sit calmly and see what's going on here. And so it's been such a blessing in so many ways. And so now, you know, I went overseas, finally got to go and visit my son, who's got a beautiful partner, Kia, in Sweden, and did a bit of traveling. And I feel like I'm now ready for a new path. I feel like the doors have opened up.
Yeah.
Cancer's gone. There's just things I want to do.
Yeah.
That will, with the things that I've learned, you know. And I feel like my path, I had to focus on problems, specifically with money. But I've learned to go, It's really possibilities.
That's a story that I tell myself.
It's a story that I tell myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's like things have really opened up. I've been truly blessed. So yeah, that's where I'm at now.
Wonderful. And it speaks to the most important relationship is the one with ourselves.
Yes.
And, you know, being able to, as you are doing, go into that beautiful, deep self-inquiry, self-responsibility, you know, self-regulation.
Yeah.
Of being able to come into that inner relationship of loving all of it.
So I still go and lie on the bathroom floor every day and go into that deep, restful state and tell my body I love it, tell the world I love it, and be in love with whatever is happening at the time. And that's my grounding. And so when I do get discombobulated, I can go back to that.
Wow. So beautiful to hear your story.
Thank you. Like... Okay, well, I think we'll wrap up there.
Yes, and thanks for joining me on the Bubble Up podcast. Thanks for, it was lovely to host today's episode.
Oh, thank you so much, Annie, for, you know, hosting and being there with
me. Listening, it's just beautiful.
And telling my story.
My honour and privilege, my friend.
Bless.
Thank you.
So thank you, everyone, for coming and checking out the Buffalo podcast. You know I love having you participate in hearing so many beautiful stories, because everyone has a story. Thank you. Ciao for now. Bye.